Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final pairing in the United States Open Championship. The players are Jack Nicklaus of North Palm Beach, Florida, and Chris Mascaro of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Mascaro has the honor. Play away, please.
Hey, next on the T Nation, thank you so much for coming back and pressing play on part two of season 12, episode number 22. Featuring my conversation with LPGA Hall of Famer Jane Geddes. I think you guys are going to be captured like I have been with Jane's enthusiasm and positivity. She's a wonderful storyteller. She and I are going to get into her looking at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and she's got a little bit of mixed emotion, as you'll hear in our conversation about it. We'll also talk about the opportunity of her becoming the LPGA commissioner. I don't know if she's on the list or not, as we have an open position right now there. They have an interim person in place right now. But back when Mike Wann stepped down years ago as the LPGA commissioner, not all that long ago, to be quite honest with you, Jane's name was on a list of people who could be the next LPGA commissioner. She had a lot of support out there by a half a dozen or so folks that I was talking to. So you'll hear about that. You'll hear about how she got the legends of the LPGA Tour off and running. She was one of the founders and its original commissioner. And we'll also go back in time to talk about her first LPGA win, which happened to be at a major at the 1986 U.S. Women's Open. You'll hear about that experience and the apocalypse that happened in and around the golf course and all of those sorts of things and her ultimate victory in a playoff on that Monday. So sit back. Relax. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. All right. Now back in next on the tee with me is another great LPGA legend and a Hall of Famer, and that is Jane Geddes. Let me remind you a little bit about Jane's background. She is from Somerville, South Carolina. Played her college golf at Florida State, where she helped them win the 1981 National Championship. She was inducted into their Hall of Fame in 1988. She joined the LPGA Tour in 1983, got her first win, and it was a big one, at the 1986 Women's U.S. Open. She backed that up by winning the very next week at the Boston 5 Classic, becoming one of only four players in LPGA history to win the week following the U.S. Open. 1987 was her best year out on tour, winning five times, including the LPGA Championship, and then back-to-back weeks at the Women's Kemper Open and the GNA Glendale Federal Classic. In all, Jane won 11 times out on tour, had 52 top 10 finishes. She went back to school after her time on tour, earning her undergraduate degree in criminology at the University of South Florida and her law degree at Stetson. She has been a wonderful friend to this show over the years, and I couldn't be more honored. She is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Jane, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for that nice introduction. Wow. I've forgotten all about half of that. Seems like another lifetime or something. I don't know, but thank you. I appreciate it. Great to be back, by the way.
So it's been a minute, Jane, since we got to spend some time together. Catch me up. What's been going on with you?
Oh my goodness. I kind of can't remember where we ended. I don't know if it was before or after my time at WWE and the wrestling world and,
right.
Back in golf and then took a little break. And kind of back at it again. I've got twin 16-year-olds, so I'm a little busy with their life and their sports and things that they're doing. But whether I'm in it or not, I'm always sort of in golf, right? Whether I'm watching from afar or kind of dipping my toe back in, to see what I can do for the game and just. It's such a part of my life and sort of my being, that it's hard to stay away, I guess.
So as you've watched and, like you say, occasionally stuck your toe back in, when you look at what's happening right now out there on the LPGA Tour, what do you think? Is there something missing? Is there something you'd like for that tour to be doing differently or better?
Oh, wow. First of all, I think the play and the players are just unbelievable. I mean, I watch them play and I'm literally in awe. I live in Tampa and I get to go over to the Pelican and the Annika event here that's played at Pelican. And I literally just go to the driving range and go watch them hit balls. It's just phenomenal. So I think there's so much on that end of it. There's so much there. The hard part for me is watching women's sports sort of explode right now, right? I feel like we're in such an interesting time right now for women's sports. And I'm not sure that the LPGA is taking advantage of, or in some way, going with that tide. You know, we're always, it's always in a funny thing because, you know, I always feel like tennis and golf are just sort of there. We've been around so long. We've sort of been the marquee women's sports for so long, right? And, you know, soccer and basketball and all these things are coming along right now, right? And they're getting so much press. And you know, and golf has just been there. It's kind of the stalwart, you know, like just been there forever. But we are, I don't know. I just feel like we're more worthy. And I think our stars and the players that are out on tour, you know, if there's a way to get them out there, I think that needs to, you know, I think that needs to be the case. I know right now the tour, you talked about it with Susie, you know, we're in a transition right now with not having a commissioner, which is hard. I will tell you, I was a part of the tour. I worked for the tour when Carolyn Bivens was there. And then we transitioned into Mike Wan. And as awesome as Mike was, there's that transition, right, where it's challenging. And so, unfortunately, LPGA is sort of in that transition right now. I, like Susie, have heard some of the great candidates that are out there. I think once somebody gets in place and, you know, I think then we kind of kickstart this thing again. But man, oh man, oh man, I'd love to see us kind of riding this wave a little bit. You know, I have some ideas behind it, what would take it, but I don't know. You know, I'm a huge fan, and I want the best for the tour and for all the players out there. So
let's take a few of the things you just mentioned a bit further. Speaking of candidates, and you heard me talk, as you mentioned, you heard me talking to Susie about it. But I remember when Mike Wan was stepping down, your name got mentioned a handful of times by some folks that I know within the tour that said, you know what, hey, Jane Geddes would make a great commissioner. Why is Jane Geddes not on that candidate list?
That's a huge compliment. I appreciate that. And it was I think back then it was probably a better time in my life. It's not a great time in my life right now. I don't know that if I was even, you know, called upon for that would work in my life right now. I'm just in a different spot. But that's a huge compliment. I feel like I've had such a unique view of the tour, having played and then being able to be on the other side and be on the executive team with Mike and, you know, represent the LPGA in the industry on a lot of different boards and different things. I really feel like I got such a great view of the tour. And so, thank you for that. It's a huge compliment. I think there's some really great candidates out there that are, the LPGA tour is a tough sell. You know, we're a global tour. And there are, you know, we're unique in that respect. And it requires a person that understands that and understands that value and how to kind of parlay that in the marketplace, because that's what really the key is. It's different. It's different than the PGA Tour, right? The PGA Tour is an American tour, you know, but the LPGA is just so different. We've been forever. So that makes it unique in and of itself. Whether it's the players or the extent of where we play, it's, you know, our TV rights deals are all around the world. There's so much to it. But I think somebody will come along and be able to take it, you know, to the next level, because that's what we deserve.
So what are the barriers that you're seeing? Why is the LPGA not exploding like the WNBA and some of the other women's sports? You talked about it being the stalwart, and it certainly is. But I think it's worthy of exploding just like the other women's sports. But for some reason, you're right, I'm not sure that it is growing or exploding at the rate that these others are. What's standing in its way, in your opinion?
Well, my opinion is that what is creating this, like, sort of groundswell with the other sports are the lack of a better word, the characters and the people, right? The Caitlin Clarks, the, you know, the players that are coming along that are these personalities, right? And I think what has been missing from the LPGA, and I've said this for years, is the ability to humanize players, athletes. It's that's what really makes it, to get to know players on a different level than just watching them hit a golf ball, right? I mean, we certainly, you know, the more that you can get to know players and get inside who they are, I think that's what creates the interest. The challenge again with the LPGA Tour is the international component of it, where, you know, the if the majority of tournaments that are shown in the United States, if players are not necessarily American or maybe can't speak English, or there's the lack of knowledge about those players, and the lack of, you know, again, being able to humanize those players regardless of where they're from, right? So it's that challenge of kind of bringing that sort of, how do you bring those players into the fold? How do you bring, you know, bring those personalities? Again, sometimes it's a language barrier, but not always, right? And humanizing them and making them stars, you know, wherever they are, whether it's, you know, TV in America or, you know, in wherever we're televised around the world, how do you do that? How do you make those people stars in those markets? And I think that's just a huge, I think it's big. I think it's what's happening, you know, like I said, I mean, if the WNBA is just the WNBA without all these now, you know, personalities and stars, it's a whole different ballgame, right? And so I think Nelly has sort of, you know, I think she's done a good job of sort of kind of breaking out of that and becoming somebody different. You know, she shows up at different places. I know she's been at, you know, I don't know if she was at the Met Gala. I don't think she was there at the thing yesterday, but I think she was there last year. And like that all makes a difference, right? When you can cross over and be that crossover sort of, you know, star.
Jane, switching gears just a little bit, we're a couple of months north of another wonderful Augusta National Women's Amateur Tournament. And one of the other things I was talking to Susie about is, I feel like we're inching our way toward a women's Masters. I mean, there was decades, right? Forever.
Yeah.
That women weren't allowed to be members at Augusta National. Now we have female members, and we now have this wonderful tournament. It feels like maybe down the road, I'm happy for what we have. I'm happy that their impact in the game and what they're doing to grow both the junior game and the women's game by having this tournament. But could you envision somewhere down the road, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years? I mean, we know they can hold two tournaments a year there because we saw the Masters during the COVID year in 2020 hold the event in November. Could we have a women's Masters?
Oh, wouldn't that be great? I have to be honest. Yeah. Like when I watch the Augusta amateur, the women's amateur, I get a little pang. I get like a little jealousy pang on that, because I remember that being announced and thinking to myself, really? Really? Wow. That's really interesting. That was not the LPGA that was the recipient of that, right? By the way, I totally agree with Susie. Everything that Augusta has done for that event, and really truly, it has really allowed women's golf to kind of blow up on that end, on the amateur end, and certainly everything that Augusta does outside of that is spectacular. But I do get a little pang every time I watch that, and just think, wow, wouldn't it be cool if that was, you know, that was the LPGA. And I hope you're right, Chris. I hope that is the vision, because I think the women deserve that. And they deserve something like, there's nothing like Augusta, right? There's nothing like the Masters. I think we always called, you know, the Dinosaur kind of our Masters, the Chevron now, you know, our Masters. And, you know, to an extent, I think we all felt that way when we were playing it. It was a very, very special event, but nothing's like Augusta.
Did you get to play out there ever?
Okay, so I have here's my Augusta story. I have never played there. However, I was invited probably three times, three different times throughout my career. I couldn't go. There was whatever. You know, I had to go here. I had to go there. Couldn't go, thinking I was going to get invited for the rest of my life, right? So right now, I will put it out there that it, when I invited again, I will drop every single solitary thing in my life to go play Augusta. Because the fact that I turned it down multiple times is just mind-blowing to me. So anyway, yeah, I could play it in my head, no problem. I feel like I could read every green and exactly where to play it from watching it, from being there. But no, I've never played. It's a killer. It's a crushing question.
Sorry.
So I know. But I'm going to get Annika to invite me over to play one of these days. So. Oh, boy.
Jane, as I mentioned earlier, you're a big reason why we have the Legends of the LPGA Tour. You were involved with getting it formed. Mm-hmm. You served as commissioner there for a time. Talk about that tour, the fantastic players like you who go out there and play in those events, and the accessibility that the fans have to Legends. I think it's the most accessible tour, if you will, where people get an opportunity to get close to all the wonderful players out there.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. It is, you know, we grew up in an era where, you know, the fans and the people that we touched were just, you know, the most important part of our weeks, right? And so it's so ingrained in our who we are as golfers and as tour players that I think we're so, you know, everybody wants to give back so much. And it is such a an important part of our world. And it's great to see the Legends kind of making a comeback right now. You know, I mean, we went through a period, I was, you know, executive director, commissioner when, you know, when we were going through COVID, and it was this kind of a sad time, you know, it was, we lost our footing and, you know, just impossible to kind of get things going. And it's really cool that, you know, the schedule is what it is. It's really picking up some ground. And I think, you know, what I think people are realizing, hey, listen, we can go into these cities and people are interested in you. We can go back to Toledo, where we have amazing, you know, we had an amazing history there, and bring back these players that people remember and that people love to go watch, you know, the Julie Inksters of the world and, you know, and Pat Bradley and Nancy Lopez and, you know, and now the younger players that are coming up, they're turning 50. They're super excited to be out there playing. And 45 actually is the age. And, you know, so it's cool. Now we have this whole other era that's coming up. Christy Kerr, you know, I mean, it's pretty cool. We've got, you know, it's going to be an exciting time for the Legends to kind of, you know, to kind of make a little bit of a comeback. You know, I think everybody deserves it. I think we do, you know, all the players that sat on the sidelines and, you know, we're hoping for a senior open. We got that, and that great event. And I think it's, you know, all these players, they deserve something sort of in the twilight of their careers. And that's what the Legend provides. And to be able to give back to these communities as well, and the fans that followed them for years.
Speaking of the Senior Open, you played in last year's U.S. Senior Women's Open, which was played at Fox Chapel in my hometown of Pittsburgh. What did you think of the atmosphere of that, the fans that were out there and playing Fox Chapel?
It was awesome. That the you know, every one of these, every one of the Senior Opens have been, the USGA makes that open an unbelievably special week for the players. It is not that the opens are not special, but in particular, the USGA goes out of their way to make all of us feel so special for, you know, every single day of that week. And they go to you know, golf courses, and we play at golf courses like Fox Chapel, which was just an unbelievable test. You know, it was in fabulous condition. It was great golf course. You know, we had a ton of fans out there following. And it's fun. You know, it has a big tournament feel for us. You know, we don't get to play in a ton of tournaments. So, you know, to kind of stay competitive leading up to that is always a little bit challenging. This year it's a little bit better. So you may do have some tournaments leading up, but, you know, to be able to come out there and, you know, I'm going to echo Susie again, to try to stay in shape to play, to feel like you kind of bring your A game, you know, that's kind of paramount when you go to a place like that. But Fox Chapel was awesome. So, and looking forward this year to going to San Diego Country Club. So it'll be another great one this year.
Yeah. We're going to get to see you out there.
Yeah. Listen, I'm exempt. So I'm going to keep playing until they kill me. I can't play anymore. That's my deal. So if they don't invite me, then I'm not going to go. And they keep telling me I can go up there. So I'll be back this year. So
are you playing in any of the other events?
I am. I'm playing in Woodford, in Lexington with Lieselotte Neumann. We played last year and had a really fun week. And so looking forward to that fun event. We get to play a scramble for a couple of days, which is just spectacular, and have fun and play some really good golf. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's a really fun event. Bunch of people, you know, Lexington's a great kind of town for us to come. So and they put on a really nice event there. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I'll probably go back to Toledo. I won in Toledo, so that Toledo's always had a kind of a soft spot in my heart. So I'd like to go play out there in July as well. So try to get a couple events in before the Open.
Jane, for the folks that haven't been with us and the other times that you've been a part of the show, I want to go back and revisit your win at the 86th US Open. Mm-hmm. It was like the apocalypse was happening that week in Kettering, Ohio. There was a train wreck with the spilled toxic waste. There was an earthquake, a plane crash. The weather was horrible with tons of rain. Yeah. Were you feeling like the locusts and the four horsemen were about to show up? Or as a 26-year-old kid, were you like, yeah, whatever, let's play golf?
Yeah, that, you know what? That was my first win. And the good news was, is I was pretty much oblivious. You know, I went into that week not playing great, got there on Tuesday. My coach was there, Derek Hardy, and we stood on the range on Tuesday and he's like, "You're hitting it great." And I was like, "Really? I stunk last week." He's like, "No, you got it." You know, but that was kind of how my week was. I just had an amazing week. And then kind of all hell broke loose around us, you know, for the whole week. It was pretty unbelievable. But it was, you know, I was just hanging in there all week, and then kind of came to the end and was tied for the lead after Sunday, and then went into a playoff on Monday with Sally Little. And, you know, I think, you know, it was interesting because Sally and I were so in different spots. Sally was like her last real opportunity to win. She had such an amazing career, and she was in the twilight of her career. And here I am, you know, first win, you know, I have no idea. I'm just like, you know, oblivious of everything that's going on, and ended up winning. And, you know, it was just an amazing catapult to my career, but a crazy, crazy week. But what was cool is the Senior Women's Open went back to NCR a few years ago, and I got to I was sort of defending champion, which was really cool. So it was such a fun week to be able to be back there and kind of relive everything on the golf course. But you know, in my senior open years. So it was really cool. Nice full circle moment.
Yeah. And that 18-hole playoff you go into, obviously, as the USGA does, right, is on a Monday. And I heard that you showed up very early on that Monday, so early that the USGA hadn't even gone out there yet to set up the tee markers. And you were already sitting there on your golf bag on the first tee, and they were like, "What are you doing?"
You've heard that story. Yeah, yes, like, you've heard that story.
Like, what are you doing? And you're like, "I'm ready to play. Let's go."
I know. PJ Boatwright was, you know, he was head of the USGA then. I was, you know, I was never a big warmer. I didn't warm up a lot, right? I just would hit a couple balls, go hit a couple putts, and I was ready to go. So I was on literally on the tee, like you said, sitting on my golf bag, and PJ came up and was setting the tees and asked me, "What are you doing?" And I said, I'm ready to go. You know, so again, let a little oblivion there. If that were later in my career, I'm not sure that I would have been so calm, cool, collected, sitting on my golf bag on the first tee. But at that moment I was. So more power to me, huh? From being young and blind and whatever. So it worked.
Sally got up 3 strokes early in the round, gave them all back by the time you got to 9. You actually had a 1-stroke lead after 9, and then you guys kind of jockeyed back and forth until you birdied 14 to take the lead for good. And then when you get to the 18th tee, you have a 2-stroke lead. What was it like for you on the 18th tee, 2 strokes in hand to win a U.S. Open?
Well, as cliche as you could possibly be, you know, I stood on the 18th tee and I, of course, said to myself, as hundreds or thousands of people have said when they practice, "I'm going to hit this drive, you know, for the US Open on the 18th tee, right?" And so in my head, I had hit that drive so many times. I literally went right back into that thought. Was I nervous? Yes. As I tell everybody, you know, even watching Rory finish the Masters, you know, people ask, like, do you think he was nervous? I was like, no. He was 1000% nervous. Like, you know, like you, like everybody shaking when they're winning tournaments, you know? So, it's amazing. It was just an amazing, you know, time for me, and to be able to have that 2-shot lead going down the last hole. And it was more scary kind of making the turn. I played the turn really well that week, and my caddy, you know, kind of reminded me that as we made the turn, you know, that I played the back nine well, and, you know, not to worry, we were going to play it well again. So, and I did. So, you know, and the rest is history, which is pretty cool.
When it was over, you went and hugged your parents who were both here. Had to be very satisfying to walk over to both of them after such a huge accomplishment.
It was amazing. They came in later. I think they came in Sunday because I was near the lead. And it was amazing. You know, it was so special for them to be able to have that. You know, that it's so, you know, I was so fortunate to win the tournaments that I won, and to have my parents there at that moment, at like really my biggest win. I mean, I will forever be that was the moment, right, to win the US Open for me, and to have my parents there. Because as everybody knows that plays, you know, that it takes a village, and my parents were so supportive of me, and, you know, I started playing later in my life, and, kind of sacrificed some things coming out of college and stuff. And they supported me all the way. You know, I had to make decisions, what I was going to be, a right or a left, or was I going to go, and, you know, was I going to turn pro or not, or what was I going to do? And they were right there with me. So to have them there then, it felt like a win for them too. And the cool thing was I was actually living at home still then. I was kind of transitioning, figuring out where I would live. So when I got the trophy just lived at their house for an entire year. And my mom like put it on a table, like right in the middle of the room, and just left it there. Like it was like a trophy table right in the middle of our house. So I never really got to hold the trophy, you know, keep it at my house, but my parents enjoyed it for a full year until I had to give it back, which was very cool. So they loved it.
No doubt.
Cute. It was very cute. Yeah. So.
And then you go out and you win the very next week. I mean, the players must have been thinking to themselves, we're in trouble now. This girl has won the U.S. Open and she wins the following week. What was it like for you going back to back?
Yeah, it was. I was just on fire. I mean, I just was, you know, mentally. You know, I went for a stretch, you know, I went for a stretch of those 12 months. It was a crazy 12 months after that of tournaments. And, you know, it's interesting because when you're going through it, you just think you're going to do that forever. You know, I literally thought, well, I got it. Now I got it, right? I've got it figured out. And now I'm going to play like this forever until you don't. But for the time that I was in that amazing mode for those 12 months through 1986, 1987, and into 88. I mean, it was pretty amazing. And I was in such a, I was in such a zone, and I was hitting the ball so well and playing so well that it was, you know, if I got in my own way, was really the only reason I didn't play well, which is pretty phenomenal. I feel so fortunate that I got to experience that in my life and in my career. It was to be able to do that at the highest level for an extended period was pretty darn cool. And so I don't take that for granted, because I know it's, you know, it doesn't happen to everyone. And I feel very fortunate.
Jane, before I let you go, remind our listeners what you're doing now.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So the last year or so, you know, I've been trying to figure out what am I going to do? And like I said, I wanted to do something in golf. And you know, about 6 or 8 months ago, Val Skinner, I played on tour, and she's a good friend. We go all the way back to college, and she was here in Tampa visiting. And we started talking about just like, let's do something in golf. Let's do something fun. Let's, you know. And so we created a company. It's called Inside the Ropes Golf Escapes. And we are, you know, putting together, you know, kind of golf schools and golf experiences that really kind of focus on inside the ropes. Like, you know, yes, we stand on, you know, I stand on a driving range of people and help and everything, but it's really about us and about taking people inside the ropes with us and playing golf and kind of getting inside our brains and thinking about what we do and doing that at really cool places. And so, you know, it's kind of an experiential company slash, you know, instructional and a lot of fun. And so we're doing that right now. So, you know, we're building our sort of portfolio where we're going to go. And, you know, anyone that's that might be interested in kind of checking it out and maybe going along with us on some of our you know, fun excursions, you know, please feel free to go to Inside the Ropes. golfescapes.com. There's, you know, there's some information on there and some interest forms and stuff. And so, you know, we're really looking forward to it. We've done a couple of them already and had some really great success and had some great fun and great to, you know, share what's in our brains and share it with people and have some fun with it. So thank you for asking.
Absolutely. How can our listeners also follow you on social media? Stay up to date with what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, Inside the Rope Golf Escapes and also Jane Gettys 5 on Instagram. I try to do my best. I keep bugging myself to do better. Hopefully I'm going to do a little better. And like I said, with our company, we're trying to kind of cross over into social media, a little bit more and get some of that influencer stuff going on. So, and by the way, congratulations to you, Chris. I'm so happy for you and so well deserved on you know, the awards that you've won and everything you've done for us in this industry and you know, and really spreading the word. You know, I really appreciate it and well deserved on those accolades.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It means a great deal to me, Jane. Yeah,
absolutely.
It is always a privilege having you as part of the show. You're one of the greatest ever on so many levels as a player and as a person, and you make every segment that you have been a part of infinitely better because you were a part of it. I hope you'll come back and join me again soon.
Would love to, Chris. Thank you so much. I appreciate it and take care.
You too. Take care, okay. Jane.
All right. Bye-bye.
That is the great Jane Gettys, folks. Just one of the wonderful people you get to meet in this game and a very accomplished player and a 10 times better person on top of all of that. Boy, I enjoy her so much. She is so much fun to talk to. She has such enthusiasm and positivity about her and obviously accomplished a two-time major champion and LPGA Hall of Famer. Just a great person. And again, you got to go check this out. I know I'm going to go check it out. Inside the Rope, golfescapes.com. Follow her on Instagram at Jane Gettys 5. We'll get her back on the show a little bit later on this summer, hopefully talk a little bit more about the legends of the LPGA Tour, which is fantastic. I'm telling you, go look at it. You want to be kind of shoulder to shoulder with a legend of the game? You get to do that out there. I mean, you can walk with the players when they're playing in some of these events. That's how, you know, open and accessible they are. They want you to be a part of what they're doing. They want to talk to you. How many tours can you say that about? Go check them out. We'll get Jane back on the show a little bit later on this year. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this week's edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again to Bob Ford, Susie Whaley, and Jane Gettys for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are, of course, Tom Patchery will be here. I'll see what I can come up with to get Mr. Cranky Pants going. A wonderful friend and one of the great course designers of our time, Bill Bergen, will be back, as will 2013 Senior Open champion Mark Wiebe. So it's going to be an amazing show, folks. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. I want to thank our friends again over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to triblive.com, and you can find this show by then clicking on the sports section tab, and we're right there front and center on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on Sports and then Podcast Network, and then you're going to get to see the Next on the Tee logo. Click on that, and many of the most recent episodes from this season are right there for you. You can also find the show available pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, including on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Player.fm, and GolfNewsNet.com. And as always, my thanks to the great folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But like I say each and every week, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next week, hit them straight, my friends.